Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to Volume 80 in the Brecan What's On Information Sessions, a series of talks produced for people with gynecological or breast cancer, their families and friends. This session was recorded on the 14th of June 2012 at the Victoria Room in the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, located in Melbourne CBD. Dr. Hamish Farrow is a plastic surgeon who works in the field of breast reconstruction. In this session, he covers a number of areas, including what women need to consider when deciding on breast reconstruction, the types of reconstruction surgery available, current issues about breast implants, and new developments in the field. We hope you enjoy this session.
I know about your disease apart from how it's affecting you. What we're here about is making you feel good and look good and be complete, and I'll let the breast surgeon look after your surgery for getting rid of the cancer, and your oncologist look after controlling your disease. I'm looking after your well-being in terms of shape and form and how it functions for you. I'm not allowed to delay adjuvant therapy. Adjuvant therapy is radiotherapy, chemotherapy. I'm not allowed to delay them because they're important for keeping you alive. So we structure what we do, and this lady that I was talking about from this morning is one of those where she was sufficiently unfit that if we tried to do a reconstruction, we may cause a complication which may cause it to be delayed in having her chemotherapy, and that's why it's not a great idea to do it. You can get away with most things most of the time, but you have to be safe in this game so that it's predictable surgery, predictable outcome, and then you can have your chemotherapy if you need it within a reasonable time frame. And then we have to think about what damage I do to people, because I certainly damage people too in operating on them. There's wounds, there's scars, there's recovery. So why do you do it? It's a personal game. This woman has what's called breast conservation surgery. So the general surgeons will see you and say, look, I'm going to do a breast conserving process. We're going to take out a lump and then we'll give you radiotherapy. The term breast conserving is actually maintaining much of the breast shape, but it doesn't maintain it all, and it doesn't necessarily maintain its form, and often you can end up with such a loss of symmetry that it's functionally rather hard to get on. It's rather hard to make a bra work. It doesn't look good in lingerie or bathers or t-shirt. It doesn't look particularly good naked. You can end up with a nipple skew whiff and so forth. But for many women, this is actually an easier option to contemplate rather than having a full mastectomy. For some people, they end up with the option of, do I have a lumpectomy and radiotherapy, or do I have a mastectomy? Plastic surgeon point of view, always have a mastectomy if you can avoid radiotherapy, because I hate it. And if there are radiotherapists out there, they'll throw sticks at me, because it's a useful treatment if you need it. And if you need it, that's fine. And again, I don't want to interfere with control of the cancer, but if it's a choice for me as to whether you should or shouldn't have radiotherapy and the choice is available to you, then not having radiotherapy is much nicer tissue for me to work with, and I think you'll get a better quality reconstruction as a general thing. So breast conserving surgery doesn't necessarily give you breast symmetry, and I see quite a few people with this. So we have a question here as to why we do reconstruction. Mostly it's a mastectomy defect. Most people I see have had one breast that's either planning to be removed or has been removed, or sometimes two breasts. And so it can be unilateral, bilateral, it can be therapeutic, in other words, you've got a disease, or it can be prophylactic. My whole family's had breast cancer, I'm BRCA1 positive or whatever, where they've got a genetic risk, and they're having them off because they don't want to go through what the rest of the family's gone through. And we're seeing more of the prophylactic now than we ever did. And I touched on this a little bit before. The biggest one for me is to forget. The year of your cancer diagnosis, if you go through that, is a horrible year. It's something no one wants to go through. And you will have reminders of that every time you have a doctor's appointment, every time you don't have a hair or your skin's not right or you don't fit a bra or whatever. And the beauty of the reconstruction is it helps you to get to the stage where that can be past history and you can just get up and go to work and put the clothes on and feel normal about yourself. You may not be the same as you were, but you'll feel some capacity to forget that year and move forward. Carly had no reconstruction. It's not wrong to have no reconstruction. It's not wrong to have a mastectomy and no reconstruction. It's not wrong to have a wide local excision. She manages beautifully. You can see in this photo when you study it that she's asymmetric. I went to her last show and it was fantastic. And I must admit, I spent a fair bit of time looking at her breasts, but I do that a lot publicly, so I get it. But she's fantastic, and it's a very strong reminder that, in fact, it's the grace with which you hold yourself. It's the smile in your eye and the walk and the talk and so forth. Life isn't all about breasts, but it's all you focus on for a couple of years after you've had a diagnosis of breast cancer. So when we do this major work to try and make a new breast, often what I find I'm doing is actually giving a woman 2 or 3 years of feeling like things are being built back to normal, and they're very concerned about the fine little touches and how things move and so forth. And after a couple of years, the perspective goes back to a bit more normal. What you look like with your gear off is actually a very small part of your life. Your friends, how you work, how you interact, your fitness generally is far more important. But if I can help pull you out of that hole, that's lovely. And so that's why I think it's a very powerful thing to do. We look at the level of what you need to achieve. Is it just something to fill a bra? And I get many women that ask me for that. And every time you pitch a horizon of what you need, a level of what would make you feel good, and you get there, you look a little bit further and you think, well, in fact, I actually need it now to work. I need it to not just fill a bra, but I need to fill a bra the same amount. I need this bit to come out. I need this bit to make me balance my hips and so forth. I hear everything. I know more than a man should about how bras and girls work. But aiming to get to the best possible, it should look the same as a breast without support, and it should move and it should feel. Now, we very rarely get to that, but if we do, that's fantastic. And yet it doesn't guarantee a satisfaction. I'll get some people that have a spectacular result and all I can see is the problems with it. I get people that have a very average result and all they see is the benefit it's given to them. So the pure photo that says, isn't this clever, doesn't actually make the right answer for people. But that's where it comes back to being a very personal outcome. So we lift, we reduce, we rotate. We put stuff in, we put implants in, we put your own tissue in, and we do things to the other side to make them work. And I'm going to take you through a bit of a tour of this. So if we look at a lumpectomy, this is a woman who's had a DCIS in the top half of this breast, and she's got a dimple in the top half, and she can't wear normal clothing. But you can move tissue around if your breast is big enough to allow you to do it. You can do what you would normally do for a reduction. So in a reduction, we would normally remove all of the skin at the bottom. Well, if that's where your tumour is, you can actually do a reduction on both sides, but one of the reductions becomes the tumour removal. There are possibilities to actually make this work from a cancer removal point of view at the time of the original removal to make it work. Now, this is a woman who's had a lumpectomy out of here, and it's taken out the bottom of the curve. And either way, you see it more clearly when she's got her hands in the air. Most breast defects are shown off far more clearly when your hands are in the air. But in order to fill that defect at the bottom of that breast in this young woman, we used implants. So it fills that bottom up again, and we put a bigger implant on the right than the left. But there's no implant that's small enough just to fill the little defect. So you put in the big implant and it happens to fill the breast up as well as filling that bottom defect. And it gives her a reasonably even outcome, and she can then not go along with that defect. This is a woman who's had an implant under not much skin on the left-hand side and radiotherapy after a wide open incision on the left. And she's quite asymmetric, and you can almost see the blue of the implant shining through the skin. So she needs a patch to fill up that bit of blue skin, and she needs a change of implant. And of course, I'll show you my best results, but she's got a little patch below the nipple on the left-hand side, and she's got a new implant in there, and it's given her marvellous symmetry. She is one of those people who's delighted by marvellous symmetry. She thinks this is fantastic, as do I. She's done very well with this. Yeah.
Has she got an implant on both sides there, or just the one?
Good question, and I don't actually remember. But if you look here, the right breast changes as well. Because it's relatively hollow in the top half, so I assume I put an implant in the right-hand side. With a picture that may be a couple of years out, there's a lot of weight change and physique change that goes on, but I assume that's what we did. The usual scenario being that if you put an implant in, you will get an unnatural, but not altogether unpleasing, kick in the top half of the breast. If you are going to use an implant to do a reconstruction on one side, and you'll see this later on, you almost have to do it on the other side to get symmetry, unless you're 17, and that's not what we're talking about today. So this woman who's had a lumpectomy above the nipple on this side here, and she's had radiotherapy, so this breast won't stretch. You can't just put an implant in there, because radiotherapy takes away your ability to stretch predictably. It makes things tight. It's like putting your cake in the oven for 20 minutes more than it should. It's got no give, no elasticity. It can feel normal to you, but the likelihood is when you operate on it, the scar reaction from that will limit the stretch and you'll get a very tight outcome. So with her, she needed a patch as well. And we put a little flap from the back. So this patch of skin here is replaced from her back. And she's got an implant on both sides. And what's happened with time is that... This nipple has now stretched because we've put the muscle in, and we're planning, you can see the little dotted lines, to lift this nipple up again and throw away much of the patch. You've probably all seen these cut-out pictures of a breast, but when you have a mastectomy, a full mastectomy removes all the breast tissue, and that involves taking out all the glands and the ducts that come up and includes the nipple. So the usual scenario with a full mastectomy is that you will lose your nipple, the areola, that coloured bit around it, some skin to make it lie flat, and all of the contents of the breast, and you'll leave a relatively thin bit of skin going up and a thin bit of skin going down. That's a full mastectomy for someone who's got presumably a cancer that's relatively near the nipple. You can save the skin of the breast in most situations, unless your cancer is close to the skin. And the more skin you save, the more the bag looks like the bag looks, you know, look beforehand. And if you don't need to take the nipple, for example, in a prophylactic woman, and she's willing to carry the risk of keeping a little bit of breast tissue in the nipple afterwards, then you can even save the nipple. And if you save the nipple and save all the skin, you could have a scar that's not actually on the breast. It's off the breast, and the skin envelope should be the same as the skin envelope on the other side, so you should get a closer result afterwards. So this is a straight mastectomy where you remove the skin and the nipple, and you tend to be left with a defect with a scar that runs all the way across. And they make it a long scar so that everything lies flat. If the scar isn't long enough, you'll have a bump at both ends. And then it's a balance of how big a scar you can get.
Excuse me, just being true to the previous photo,
yep.
Two slides back, you show a picture of the... you said you take out what's on the inside. So how come after that mastectomy there isn't like a bag? There is.
So if you had a nipple sparing mastectomy, right, you left all the skin, you'd have a deflated bag hanging there. Absolutely you would.
So why, but it didn't look like, just looked perfectly flat.
So that's not this one. So if we go one more.
It looks perfectly flat.
Yeah, so this lady's had this bit of skin removed. Uh-huh. Now, if I take a patch out, I'll pull it smooth, okay. I'll pull it tight. And that's done on purpose, because if you leave all the skin, but you don't fill it again, it will be an empty folded roll and you'll have rashes and things that occur in the folds. It doesn't work to actually have unfilled skin. It doesn't work very nicely at all. It tightens up and gets scarred and you have crevices and holes in there. So they make it smooth so you can wash and clean that skin. You can put a prosthesis on the outside. Does that make sense? So that's the most common mastectomy you'll see if people have had a mastectomy. A skin sparing, they leave all this skin. But even so, if you have a skin sparing, you are going to lose this much tight out of your breast. It's a bit like cutting a hole in my pants, and if I close it, you'll see my socks. Okay, if I pull it together, you are going to lose height. And it's amazing how much taking this much out of a breast will actually lift it. It's like when you put your arm in the air, the breast all of a sudden looks perfect. It's kind of nice. It's the same effect. And that's a worthwhile thing to remember, because it changes the shape of the bag. If you skin spare and you put a patch back in, your bag stays the same shape. So if you don't put a patch back in, like I cut my hole in my pants, if I put a patch in, my pants stay the same length. If I don't put a patch in, then I'm going to shorten the bag. So they're the two sort of options you have. You can either make the bag shorter by closing the hole, or you can put a patch in and leave the shape the same. And clearly, if you leave the nipple there, the bag should be the same shape. The trouble with this process is that when you do a mastectomy, you create a whole lot of scar on the inside, and the whole lot of scar on the inside is a bit like wearing an elastic crop top. It tightens everything, and the skin will actually, even though you've left it all there, will retract against you. It shrinks. So the reconstruction options we have are pretty much pictured there. We're going to go through these separately. But there are donor sites that we steal tissue from in various places, and then there's implants.
Excuse me, can I just ask you, if somebody's had a mastectomy and radiation therapy, can
then
they...
Then you can't stretch the skin.
Yeah.
You will need to patch it.
Oh, so you can still patch it?
Yep.
Okay,
so we'll show you how that works. So you can go with implants alone, straight up, or with an expander, either as the permanent device. This is a, I used to say it's a muffler trying to be a toaster. It's a device that tries to do both jobs, and I'll explain what the expander does. Or you have an expander, which is the first stage, and you put it in, you stretch the skin, and then you come back and put an implant in once you've made the pocket. And we'll go through this stepwise. So an implant alone, if you are leaving all the skin, you can theoretically put an implant straight in, because the bag's big enough to cope with it. All right? The bag has to be healthy enough to take the stretch of that implant in there. And the peculiar thing is that you need to have enough muscle to cover that implant too. So when we put an implant into a young person's breast to make them bigger, we've got a breast, and then muscle, and then implant, usually. So there's lots of cover over the implant, so you don't see the implant. When you do a posh spice and you put an implant underneath a very thin woman, mostly under the skin, you can see the line around the top of the implant. She marketed that, and that was her big calling card. She's since had them taken out, but that's how we knew what a bad looking implant used to look like, because it was just under the skin. It's a bit like putting a teddy bear in a bed, throwing a sheet over the teddy bear and letting it settle. You can see it's a teddy bear across the room. If I throw a thick enough doona over it, you won't know what it is. You can even feel it. You might not be able to work out what it is, because the cover hides what's underneath. When you want to put an implant in a breast after mastectomy and the skin this thin, you have to try and make the cover thicker. So we lift the pec muscle up and we slide the implant underneath. Alright? If I'm going to do an implant on the day of mastectomy to do the complete reconstruction in one day, I have to put that implant underneath the muscle, but I have to stop the muscle sliding upwards. The pec muscle, this is your only bit of beef pack for the day. I was going to include my photo, but it's not nearly as nice. The pec muscle runs across from your arm, across to the side of the chest, and it's attached all the way around here. And it's the same in a woman or a man, but you can see where the nipple is in a man. The woman's breast actually comes well below this and well out to the side of this. So a normal breast will sit well below and outside the dimensions of the pec muscle. So you can't put your implant underneath the pec and expect it to be fully covered. It'll be covered in the upper half. All right? If I put an implant in here, what's going to happen the first time this lady moves her arm is this muscle's going to contract, and the implant will tend to flick on top of the muscle, and you'll be left with an implant sitting under the skin. So if you're going to try and put an implant in, we have to grab this muscle and hold it down to here. And usually what we do is we don't bother with that. We put in a device which is only just a little bit filled so the muscle can move, in a sec, without that pressure of the implant causing the muscle to flick underneath. But there's a couple of devices which we've got now, and one of them is this, which is relatively new, which is a bit of skin from someone who's passed away in the States, and they gamma irradiate this and take all the cells out of it, and we just use the scaffolding of that dermis, which is a bit like the leather in your shoes. It's the same sort of quality material, but you can stitch it to the muscle and you can stitch it to the chest and it will hold that muscle down. And if you patch that bit below the pec muscle, you can put the full implant in on the day, as long as your skin is good enough to cope with it. That's new. That's only just beginning. And I'm sorry. Well, it's been around for about 5 years, but it's only just getting into this country. And it's expensive and Medicare doesn't cover it. So the last layout I did for this spent $5,000, $2,500 on each side to provide this so she could do it on the day. Did you have a question?
I did have a question. When you had a full mastectomy, how much of that pec muscle did they take away?
They should take none. Unless your tumour is right at the very back of your breast, and that's extremely uncommon, the pec muscle should be intact.
So I've only done this on a couple of patients, but it's you know, potentially worthwhile if you are not a great candidate for an anaesthetic and you want to do it all in one hit, then maybe this is worth the investment for you. And but the game is you have to have enough, you have to have a good skin camera that's nice and healthy and you can take a stretch on the day, and you have to pay for this stuff. So the expander is used to create skin. What happens, as I said to you, after a mastectomy is the skin will tighten up a bit like you're an elastic bra. You slide a device underneath the muscle. You don't have to worry about the bottom corner because we're not going to stretch it that much. And the whole thing retracts in. So even though you may have saved much of your skin, the whole thing tightens up and you're left with a really, looks like a speed hump compared to a normal breast. And then you stretch this back out again. So once it's recovered, you can then start to push. So we put it under the pectoral muscle, we give a little bit of a stretch to the skin on the day, and then in the rooms, we inject salt water into this to make it progressively grow. And it's a bit like a pregnancy stretches your belly. This is a pregnancy of the chest, it stretches the breast skin. So this is a little magnet device we use to find where the valve in this expander is. It feels quite firm and round, like a 50-cent piece underneath your skin. And then you can put a needle in and fill that up. So the needle goes into the valve, which is behind the pec muscle, behind the skin, and fills this up. And you can see how the pec muscle doesn't come all the way down there. Bling is important if you're having this procedure done. It tends to make it easier to bear. This needle doesn't hurt so much for most people because it's relatively numb skin. And when you fill these up, they're tight. It's a tight pressure. For those of you that have been pregnant, that last couple of weeks of pregnancy when you can play ping pong on the baby, you can't imagine it getting any tighter. That's as tight as these can feel. Bill's telling me, I woke up and I felt like someone had parked a truck on me. I don't know how many people have actually had that experience, so where they get that memory from, it interests me. But it's a very tight band, and it's like someone's giving you a bear hug. And if you've had it done on both sides, it's a fair percentage of your chest diameter, so it is not a comfortable environment to have a tissue expander in. It's tough to hug, it's tough to sleep on your side, it's tough to lie in front. It's uncomfortable. How many people have had an expander in here? Yeah, so there's a bit of experience in here, and there's certainly some in the volunteers, but it's a process and it does stretch your skin. And
is that with
it
a skin patch or without a patch?
So there's no patch in this girl, and this is not an acceptable or not a suitable result if you've had radiotherapy. You've lost the ability to grow skin by stretch. And I'm being black and white about that. There'll be people who say you can, and I'd say it's not worth the effort. So you progressively make this thing bigger as you go. And then once you have stretched the pocket out, then you go to your implants and you pick an implant that will fit inside that pocket, which will ideally give you a similar volume to the other side so that you can make the two volumes match. We'll often try and blow that expanded side up a little bit bigger than we need, so if there's a bit more looseness in it when you let it down and put a smaller implant in, and then it gives you a bit more softness. I can talk to you about the nature of implants, but it becomes a personal gig when you get to the stage of the exchange. I think we might just move on from that. But simply to say that silicone is safe. They did large cohort studies, and what I mean by that is they had 10,000 women with implants and 10,000 women without implants, and they checked their diseases over 10, 15 years. And they said, if you've had silicon implants, are you going to get arthritis? Are you going to get chronic fatigue? Are you going to get dementia? Are you going to get lymphoma? Are you going to get... And they looked at them all and they found that, in fact, that both groups had just as many headaches as each other. They've had just as many diseases as each other. We don't believe that silicon implants give you disease. They certainly give you mechanical issues on your chest, but they don't make you sick. The one interesting thing was the two cohorts, there was less breast cancer in the girls who had implants. I don't actually think that implants are protective. It's probably because the girls who had the implants in the first place had small breasts and therefore maybe had a smaller garden to get a weed in, if you can take that analogy. But either way, they're safe, and we use them, and we use them routinely. Okay? If you get a leak, local exposure to silicon, if you get a leak, you will develop a lump. And in the situation of having had breast cancer, that's terrifying, but it's actually not dangerous to you, and it's not going to cause cancer, and you just have to deal with it. Now, there is one...
Does that happen very often when they leak?
No. The leak rate's about 1% a year. So, over 10 years, 90% of people won't have had an issue. Most people that leak don't even know it's happened, because it sits in the scar bag that you've made, and it leaks inside that. And it's a matter of expecting that you will change your implants every 10 years, but if you're good at 10 years and they look fine at 10 years, then there's no reason to change them. You just have a look every 2 years after that. And most girls that have been through this have a regular screening program where they look at the other breast. You would ultrasound the implanted side at 5 years, at 10 years, at 12, 14, 16, 18 years afterwards. And I've had women 30 years on who've had implants and they look like they were put in yesterday. Having said that, I've had implants at 8 years that look like, my goodness, someone chopped this one. But if they don't make you sick, it's a mechanical issue. It's like a flat tire. It's a bloody nuisance and you have to fix it, but it shouldn't damage you. There's this weird little condition called ALCL. This is a large cell lymphoma. This is a very rare tumor which has been found next to the wall of an implant in 60 women worldwide. And it is a cancer and it has a slow growing progression. And there's one woman in Melbourne, which is why we all know about it. Getting this is less likely than being hit by lightning. And realistically, we're looking at it as a scientific question, but we don't actually think there's a specific relationship to the implants, because it occurs elsewhere in the body too, but it's been found next to an implant in 60 women. And I think if you imagine how many millions and millions of women have had implants, I don't think there's any science to suggest that one should be frightened about implants because of this. So an implant reconstruction is great if your other breast stands up. It'll give you fullness in the top half of the breast. So if you have a naturally upstanding breast, like this woman, that works. If you're in a supported environment, so remember this woman we saw before? She's had a tissue expander and then an implant, and it's filled out that envelope, and it gives her quite a nice shape that matches her in a bra, but out of a bra, this one falls. You have two options here. You can either say, well, that's fine, I'll just, my public life, I've got a bra on. My private life, my husband likes the one without the scars. And that was her situation, fair enough. And she likes the one without the scars too. Or you could lift this one. And a lift is like pushing that uphill. It'll slide back down again over time. So you get it up, it looks pretty close, and then it progressively slides down with gravity. The reconstruction one won't slide. It'll stay up forever.
You mean the implant one?
Yeah. I wish we knew. It's the scar reaction around the implant tends to give it much more protection against gravity. There's also no weight change that occurs with it because the implant stays. So as women age and they get bigger and smaller and bigger and smaller, it's a bit like, I use the analogy of blowing up a balloon. You leave it up for a night and let it down, it never comes back to what it was. So the traumas of life will make your natural breast sag. So if you are a little hollow, and she's only a little hollow, this woman, this girl across here, we put another implant on the other side, it gives a little kick on the other side. It can be subtle, but it'll fill the tops of both sides to make them more even, and you see another example there. So I will commonly suggest to women that we put an augment on the other side when we're doing a breast reconstruction with an implant.
Why did you take the nipple?
I didn't. The breast surgeon did, because there was a cancer on that side. And the cancer was close enough to the nipple. So the other side still has its nipple.
Yes, but hasn't
she
already had the...
No, that's the biopsy. They put a needle, fine needle biopsy. I often see them at that stage. They've had their diagnosis. They come and see me still bruised, and then we plan the mastectomy. Yeah. And when you do the same thing on both sides, you tend to get pretty good symmetry. So this woman had cancer on this side, nothing wrong with this side. She had enough tummy for me to make another one look just like this, but she said, no, I want to be bigger and higher, and I want you to do both sides. So we did both sides, and she was quite grumpy with me because she still wanted to be bigger than that. But that's okay. These are the biggest implants I could buy in the country at the time. So bilaterally again, this is after mastectomies, and she's had tissue expanders and implants. And she's had no radiotherapy. She's got a tattoo, but they didn't do it in the end. And same thing with this. Two different mastectomies, two different times, two different surgeons, and two different locations of tumour. So the skin they took out was in different places, which is why her scars are different. And that's her after implant reconstructions, nipples, tattoos. They're her pills. I didn't provide them. We did the rest.
So you constructed the nipple?
Yeah.
And the areolas tattooed?
We tattooed the areola. I have a cosmetic tattooist that comes into my rooms to do that.
What's the nipple constructed? Is it just...
I'll take you there. We'll get there.
With that scar, fading time?
All scars fade in time, but it's an individual personal process as to how your scars mature. Scars will tend to be aggressive and pink when they're new, so over that first year, and then they progressively become more pearly white. She had quite aggressive scars to start with, but I've opened this bit here to put the implants in twice now. Once to put the expander in, second time to put the implant in. This is the older scar out here, and you can see the rest of it starting to fade better. But her old scar here is still pink. So this is who she is. And they will go pearly white with time. Yes?
Is that just an implant or will be patched as well?
No, she's just an implant. The first series of this talk is just implants.
Is there like an acceptable minimum time, like if you've had the mastectomy and you've had radiation?
Yeah.
So
my personal minimum after radiation is to wait 6 months.
Yeah.
And the reason being that when you go through your radiation, it all gets a little inflamed and it settles down on the skin quicker than it settles down the rest of you, but you want that sort of tightening to have finished so that what we're working on is a stable platform. And so I tend to wait 6 months or anything more. So this woman, so there, and I've scored the edges of her nipples and we're going to colour them in later on. I have made nipples for her with little scars that come across here, but all those scars will disappear in her tattoos. So implants are good because they don't give you extra scars. Scar of the mastectomy is enough. We can get in and do it that way. The operation is relatively quick. To put the expander in takes me about 3/4 of an hour at the end of a mastectomy, or about an hour and a half if it's a delayed reconstruction. But they're tight and they're uncomfortable, and you have a series of visits to the rooms, and you have to have a second surgery in my hands because I think they'd be better.
Sorry?
Yep.
You think it's better to have a second surgery than doing a hepatoma mastectomy?
No. The more, if you do it at the time of mastectomy, you get to save more skin. So for many women, that's a good thing to do. If that, what about the bugs go on, there's nothing you can do about it. But most of my reconstructions are at the time of mastectomy.
So implants at the time of mastectomy?
For expanders, yeah.
And the second surgery?
Once you have fully expanded and you have enough give, when you blow it up, it's tight, and the skin goes, and it loosens and you get a bit more give, that's the time when you put your implant. You want to have got past the tightness phase.
To replace the implant?
Yep.
Does that create much of a scar again?
As in change the expander to an implant the implant later?
If you have to change the implant later.
So you go through the old scar.
Okay.
And that procedure, the second stage procedure, is really a lovely one because most people go from tight and uncomfortable to, this is much nicer. So it's a happy operation, the second one. They feel better, they recover really quickly, they're back to work. Same thing with changing an implant. It all relates to the work you have to do outside of the bit that's numb. If you're only working in the bit that's numb, girls get up and they're fine the following day. If you are if your implant is high and you need to lower it and this bit's got feeling, you'll feel that bit. But you go through the old scar almost always. And they make a firm, high and relatively cool breast because the breast has no blood supply. So it'll be cold if you come out of the cold, a bit like your tip of your nose for a while. And then they'll warm up and they'll be warm afterwards. But patients often tell me they're a little cold. The aesthetics of an implant reconstruction tend to deteriorate with time. They look good at a year and they get a little bit worse and a little bit worse and a little bit worse as time goes by. They can go hard, they can lose their shape, they can leak, and they don't change with weight and gravity, so that if you've done implants on both sides that tends to work, but if you've got a natural and an implant, then the natural's always going to go south. They just do. If you get a little heavier as you get older, then the implants will change. So a couple of examples. She's in the process of having a nipple made. She's had the bump made, and we'll go there. So in relatively young women, it can actually look nice, but you need a perf breast on the other side. So doing this, you find it hard to get an implant that looks like this. This is a sideways breast with not a lot of fill. It works better to put an implant on both sides. Okay. Prophylactic mastectomy, as I said, is becoming more common. It's those people with a family history. And I actually think this is really tough because people come in and they've got perfectly gorgeous breasts. They're natural, they're normal, they have no disease, and what they're doing is saying, before this becomes a danger to me, I'm going to throw them away. So you see a girl like this and you think, I can't make you as pretty as you are now, I can't make you as natural as you are now, I can take away your risk. And we end up with a result like this, and she's got little colour changes because her nipples tried to die on us after this operation. And she could go and have tattoos to actually make the colour better, but hasn't done that. But these allow her to function in normal clothes. Likewise, this girl gets to there. And you can see there's a bit of a distortion in terms of the positioning of the nipples. This all has to do with how that shrinkage occurs. You know, we talked about the shrinkage afterwards and it tightens up. If it shrinks and moves this way, well, your nipple's going to move this way. If it shrinks and moves that way, your nipple's going to move that way. And I don't have ultimate control over these. I try and make them what I want. I can generally get the shape right, but the nipple position is not ultimately predictable. But you can become close enough that no one else can tell apart from your intimate partners. Now I know in Brighton they dance a lot with their clothes off, but for most of us, well, I've heard about Brighton, but I always wanted to go. But for most people this is about giving you the capacity to function socially.
So would you waive it so you do the nipple construction?
So the nipple has to wave, in my view, until your shape is schmick. Mm-hmm. So if you're making a new nipple, you can put it where you like. Yes. What I was talking about there, of course, is with keeping the nipples in the operation, that there's some potential for drift. And in fact, the very first slide I showed you of an implant, the scar from the nipple was way up here, because she had stretched beautifully down here and not at all up here. And if she'd kept her nipple, she would have looked very cross-eyed. High beam, low beam, you know, it doesn't sort of work.
So, but do you recommend then waiting a year to do the reconstruction of the nipple?
No. No. So if I do an implant reconstruction and we get an implant in and the shape looks good, 6-8 weeks later you can put the nipple off. You'll know by that stage how it's going to change. Okay, so we're going to come to patches and flaps. The three most common are the back, belly and butt. I don't know which of those three guys is which, but I just thought the three of them looked like they were doing a breast sort of, you know, advertising. Why do we use a flap? We use a flap when just putting an implant doesn't work. So after you've had radiotherapy, or if you've had infection, or if your breast hangs low and you don't really want to fill it with an implant. It avoids using prostheses at all, so you don't have to worry about the 10-year maintenance thing. And it potentially reduces your need for later surgery. If this is something that is made of you, it should gain weight with you and lose weight with you. It should be warm and move when you move. So it tends to make it a more pleasant thing to own. So this is a woman who's had radiotherapy. She was sent to me by her general surgeon, having had an implant and radiotherapy, and I got it closer by playing with it. But you can see it's all irregular, and it doesn't have that smoothness to it, and it's firm. You know, it feels a bit like pushing on a shoulder. But she was happy with that and wasn't willing to go through more surgery. It's each to their own, really. But these sorts of girls, it's almost impossible to get a nice shape. They've had radiotherapy, it's all gone tight.
Like that.
Okay. And this poor girl had an infection and she lost both expanders. She had expanders on both sides, got an infection on one side, it spread to the other side, she lost both. If you get an infection around a prosthesis, you're going to lose your prosthesis. So that's a risk that comes with implants. This is my prompt to remind me, and those that have met me and had a reconstruction with me will know I talk about rose gardens. My great-grandfather was killed by a rose thorn, so I intrinsically hate roses, but my wife loves them. So we live this, as long as she prunes and doesn't put the thorns on the grass, I'm happy. But when you have a piece of tissue and you want to move from somewhere to somewhere else, you have to take a blood supply with it. It's like having a vacuum cleaner that's plugged in. I can pull out the vacuum cleaner, go next door, and if I can't plug that thing in again, the vacuum cleaner is useless. If I take a block of tissue and I move it up to here, it's not going to survive unless it has a blood supply. Alright? So then it's a process of how do you get the blood supply to come with the piece of tissue. Our options are really to take something that's really nearby, and like the vacuum cleaner, if I leave it plugged in, I can actually go in the next room and I can vacuum clean in the next room because the cord is long enough to follow. If it's too far away that I've got to go, then I have to find a plug to plug in at the far end. So I remove tissue with the artery and the vein that keeps that bit of tissue alive, and I plug them in again up here on the chest with microsurgery. All right?
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Can you do the microsurgery?
No, I do the microsurgery. Plus, in terms of microsurgery, we look bigger than we are. We're very small. There was something else I was going to say then, but it's gone. Doesn't matter. So, flaps are bits of tissue with a blood supply, and we can move them around on the breast, like I showed in those initial photos where there was a roll around. That's a flap. Or where we steal it from back, belly, butt, and sometimes in the thigh, and sometimes even the love handles, and it's an imagination game as to where you can steal tissue from, but you have to have a blood supply that you can move. So the latissimus dorsi is a big old piece of muscle on the back, and it's got a blood vessel that runs right through that muscle. That muscle is plugged in your armpit. So if this is my muscle around here and it's plugged into my armpit, I can actually swing it to here and my plug doesn't have to come undone. Alright, so it's lovely because it's right next door, and then usually, even with an axillary dissection, that blood vessel is intact. So I can predictably move it around, and I can take some skin and some fat over the top of it because the blood vessel that goes in the muscle comes up through the muscle and keeps that skin and fat over the top alive as well.
Can I just ask, if you've had nodes removed from that same side,
still works? Yeah.
And if you're removing skin from another part, do you take enough skin to cover the whole breast?
You take enough skin for what you need.
Right, that's fine.
Okay, and you have to balance how much skin you have as to how much you need. What I was going to say is, we talk about skin grafts, you know, when someone has a burn, we put a skin graft on. That's a paper thin or glad wrap thin piece of tissue. It doesn't need much oxygen to live. You can do that without a blood supply because it'll pick it up where it gets to.
Mm.
When you move something big, it has to carry the blood supply. So like if I was grafting a tree, I can take a little branch and I can stick the branch into another tree and it'll survive. But if I'm actually moving the whole tree, I've got to take the roots as well to give it a life. Yeah.
When you do these amputations, by the way, will you lose strength in your back from that?
Yeah. Most of the people that I do this on, I take the whole muscle. Because to take the blood vessel usually involves taking out the nerve, and it doesn't matter if you leave muscle behind. If it hasn't got a nerve, it's not going to jump anyway. So yes, you will lose strength in your back. What do you use the latissimus dorsi for?
Mm.
Mark Magnusson is going to win a gold medal for us. You look at his back, he's got a really V back, like those big guys in the gym.
Yeah.
That's his lats. They talk about lats. That muscle pulls down, so it pushes you out of a chair, it slams your car boot when you're really frustrated with your kids.
Yeah.
It probably gives you a little bit of topspin on your tennis serve. But there are three or four other muscles that do a similar job, and unless you're a quadriplegic and you need to get out of a chair, you can actually use your knees. You can use your pec muscle to do a similar job. It will do most of the same job. But yes, if you specifically like to rock climb and you want that pull down action to be really strong, you'll lose that if you use your lats. So I get athletes and we don't do it. I've got physios I don't do it on because they have to push down.
Musicians?
violinist?
Guitarist.
It's not strength. This is not a strength issue for you. That's a control issue, and you'll be no different.
Yep.
How would you cut into the stomach?
We haven't got the stomach. I'll come to the stomach. Give me the tummy. I'll get there.
As far as successful outcomes, is there an optimum site that you prefer to take the tissue from?
To me, the best reconstruction quality is using the belly, because it replaces the whole volume and all the skin, and thereby it's the most natural outcome. When you use the back, unless you're particularly chubby around the back, what you're getting is a big broad muscle cover and a small patch of skin, and you use the big broad muscle cover to cover an implant. So most of my lat dorsis have an implant underneath them, and what I'm doing is giving back the stretchability by putting the muscle in there, and I'm giving back the cover of the implant so you don't see it with the muscle. But I'm achieving only half of it made out of you and half of it made out of implants. So for me, if you're matching a natural, it's best to use all natural if you can.
Even if you don't have a lot of flesh on
it? If you don't have it, it's not an option. You can only take out of the pantry what's in there.
Are we talking skin or fat?
Both.
Does that mean that you use your tummy muscles?
Yeah, I'll come to the tummy, if I may. I'll come to the tummy, because I'll talk about it. But the point is, when this discussion happens, I do a generic, hello, I'm Hamish, you know, you've had, oh, okay. And then basically the next bit is, I need you to take all your clothes off, most of your clothes, so I can see. And then it's a matter of saying, you haven't got much of that, you've got a bit of that. That'll actually work really well. And it's a game, and all of the options work for different people. So I will see people with no tum and plenty of back, or plenty of back and no tum, the other way around. And for some people, they've got a scar on their tummy, and that might preclude me doing that too. So it's very personal, and using one operation to fix all the problems doesn't work either. And St. Vinny's tried that up here in Melbourne, I shouldn't say that was politically incorrect, but we'll move on. This takes about 3 to 4 hours. I'm making a reasonably big hole in your back underneath the skin, but because I'm doing that damage, you will weep fluid into that, and it's like blister fluid, and it'll go on and on and on. So we leave it draining for 10 days. You don't need to stay in hospital for 10 days. You stay in hospital for 3 or 4 days, but you'll have a drain in there which you'll go home with, which is tedious. And then when you pull the drain out, you'll recollect more fluid in there, and we have to put a needle in and drain that off later on for a day or two, for a week or two. But it can be very effective. So this lady has had 2 lat dorsis at 2 different times. That's one scar, that's the other scar. She had big come dance with me rolls on her back. And that's all her. There's no implant in there. So that's all fat. And she had enough fat in her back and muscle to make a breast. And we did it twice. Now she's had a patch here because she's had a previous operation here, and her patch is in different spots. But her general outcome is pretty good. This woman has had DCIS taken out of here. And she had a divot, and she said, I really don't like this divot. I like the lady in the beginning. For this lady, we put in implants. But you'll notice also, before I go, she's got really long kangaroo nipples that she described. And she said, can you make my nipples a bit smaller? I said, absolutely. So we did implants and nipples. And then we found this nipple had DCIS in it. So now she's got DCIS in 2 different spots on the same breast, separate. There's no good way to control that. She ended up with a mastectomy. So she goes, oh, this is fantastic. I've got the best rack. What do you mean you're going to take it off? And we had to then come there. So then we put in a patch using her lat dorsi to try and keep the shape the same. And that muscle now is covering that, is her back muscle. And we went on and made a nipple for her and tattooed it. And that's her back, to show you what they look like. We tried to put the scar in her bra line, and I've matured on from there. I think that's a waste of time. I now try and put the scars this way, because most people that show their backs off are in a one-piece bathing suit or in a ball gown, and most scars need to leave this area open. We very rarely go outside of the bra. When I say we, I never go outside of the bra. So there's one woman with, she's had a scar here, and you can see how with a bathing suit that doesn't work tremendously well. You don't look at your back that often, but to save it being there,
I've moved on from doing the scar. But here's a lady who's had radiotherapy, and this skin is all tight. You can see the pigment of the suntan of her radiotherapy. This patch here is from her back, and she's got an implant underneath. So it allows for you to have an implant because the patch provides for the skin that you need to get rather than trying to stretch it. See that? You'll hear about this if you talk to the enthusiast. This is trying to take skin and fat from the back without taking the muscle. So what you're doing in this situation is that blood vessel coming down that pops up through the muscle, you find that blood vessel and you can take the bit of skin over the top and the vessel without actually taking the muscle. It's nice, but often people don't have a lot of skin on the back, and for me the lap dorsi's value is that big broad muscle because you can cover an implant with it. But these happen occasionally. It's a safer operation if you're very big. If you're overweight, then your risk of having a complication in wound healing is less with a back than a tum. So we'll go on to tums now. The original operation was a tram, and that is a funny name. It's a good name for Melbourne, but the tram stands for transverse rectus abdominis myocutaneous flap. This muscle, this washboard six-pack that the Chippendales have, and I used to have, that guy before we show his photo again, because he had a good definition of tram. Now you see, that's fine. The rectus abdominis muscle is this muscle here, and the patch of skin we take runs across the tummy in a transverse lie. So that's where the name came from. But essentially what we're doing is taking fat and skin from the lower part of the belly to move it up to the breast. And how we get it there is the interesting bit. There's a little blood vessel that comes in from the top and a little blood vessel that comes in from the bottom, and these are the power cords to our vacuum cleaner. So I can move this bit of tummy up to the chest as long as I keep this power cord attached, like you saw in that photo. And that way, if you imagine my thigh is the muscle with the blood vessel in it, I can do that and I can carry this bit of stuff up to here. Trouble is I've taken all this muscle away, so I've now got a big hole in my muscle and I will get a weak tummy. So if I did that, this is my sort of picturing of it, then we discovered that you could actually leave a strip of muscle on both sides and that made the injury less. And people got through that a bit better. You've taken some muscle with the blood vessels in it, but you've left a bit of muscle behind. It still worked kind of well, but not brilliant. Better was to take the block of muscle out and its blood vessel from the bottom, and now I'm unplugging the vacuum cleaner, I'm walking up here and I'm plugging it in again. Okay, and I have a block of muscle, so most of my muscle remains. But again, I've still got a hole in my muscle, and when I cough or lift something, I've got a gap and I can get a bulge in the belly. So then they said, well, we don't need all the muscle, why don't we just take part of the muscle? And that was better, that hurt less. That meant that you left a bit of muscle behind. And what's happening here is that you have muscle coming down and the blood vessels popping up to supply the skin over the top. And they're saying, well, let's leave this bit of muscle and this bit of muscle and we'll take those sprinklers to this garden with the little bit of muscles that are coming between them. All right? And we're reducing the amount of muscle we're taking by reducing the amount of sprinklers we're taking. Well, the natural evolution of this is that if you only need one sprinkler, you can split your muscle and pull all the pipes out and you can actually leave all the muscle behind and just take the perforating vessel. P for perforating becomes DIEP. And a DF is a funny old name, and at least it's been a better one, but DIE is the name of the blood vessels that come up from the bottom. P is the perforator that goes through. So we are relying on a perforating vessel from the deep inferior epigastric vessel, which means I can take all of this, or a lot of this fat, and move it up here without actually damaging the muscle. So this is the question you're asking. You can leave the muscle behind now. To do that clever little dissection takes longer. It relies on only one sprinkler, or maybe two. So again, I go back to the rose garden. If I've got a rose garden and the pipes go underneath the concrete floor, or you know, path on the way there, and I don't really want to damage the concrete floor, so I'm actually going to just pull out what I can get out, but it means I can only take one sprinkler. I'm going to turn the other two off. The flow through that remaining sprinkler won't cover the whole garden, but it'll cover most of it. and thereby I can carry a fair bit of the tummy on one perforator, but I may not be able to carry the whole tummy on the perforator. So there are limitations as to what you can do by leaving all the muscle behind, but this is the state of tummy-based breast reconstruction at the moment. Just going back to tram, because it's still done quite a bit in town, it takes the muscle, all right? And in so doing, it's a muscle used for coughing, sitting, straining, and so forth. You do get a tummy tuck out of this, but you get a long scar too. So you get a flat belly, but a long scar. Is it positive? Is it negative? It's in a personal game as to whether that works. But the nice thing is it should give you a soft, warm breast that you can shape into as close as you can get to real. It's not a great idea if you're expecting more children. I don't actually think that's an absolute. You can do it if you're just aware of the difference it's going to make, but your tummy will be tighter and flatter. It's better if you've had your kids. It takes about 4 to 5 hours, 6 days in hospital, no driving for a month, and you can get a possible bulge in the belly. If, like the vacuum cleaner, I can't plug it in, and I can't therefore turn the vacuum cleaner on, if I get this up here and I can't make the plumbing work, the flap will die, and you can lose the lock. And the chance of that happening is really small, it's probably less than 1%, but it's still a risk, so you have to go into this knowing that's a possibility.
Here's a tip. Can you minimise that risk?
Yeah, get a good surgeon. Realistically, it relies on your anatomy. So what are your blood vessels like? And then what's the experience of your team and what's their success rates? And you get better as you get older, or you've done more of them. Internationally published rates run to about 3%. My personal rate's about 0.8%, and I know that's about equal with the guys that do them every week. But the occasional microsurgeon is probably not going to offer it to you, because it takes kahunas to do this sort of surgery in its own gentle way. So here's a bulge in the belly where the muscle wall is not so strong. She's had a tram and she's got a bit of give, and we would need to go back in and put some mesh in or something like that to try and flatten it off if it bothered her.
So
and
you can't go further down with the scar?
So, well, it depends on where your sprinklers are. You have to take the sprinklers in the middle of the garden. If the sprinklers are low, your scar can be low. If your sprinklers are high, the scar will be a little higher. The usual thing is they come out around the belly button. And usually from a tummy tuck point of view, you have to take skin from belly button and down, and then it's a matter of how far down you can pull it. The lower you can pull, the lower your scar can be. But for this girl, she's relatively thin. Her scar will be at the level where it has to be to allow that to close. Yeah, it can be used in a double if you have enough tummy to do both. But you need to then have enough breast on one side, or enough tummy on one side to make a full breast. So a DF by comparison is a little bit longer, 5 to 6 hours instead of 4 to 5. You're in hospital at 4 to 5 days, and you can drive in about 3 weeks. So there's less pain. It's a quicker recovery, you're back driving faster, but it's a longer operation, and to my mind it's a good deal.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to tell, once you look at someone, exactly what sort of transfer modality they had, because the tissue is the same. It doesn't matter whether it was a pedicle tram, a free tram, or a deal. The result will look the same if it all survives. The difference is in your belly afterwards, not your breast. But some people tell me they think they can tell, and they can tell the difference between these two dolphins. I don't do it personally. So a flap's fantastic in the situation, for example, where you've had radiotherapy to the chest. This is a woman who had a mastectomy and radiotherapy. She's big, she's got a tummy, it says, please take me. So she would be someone you took her clothes off and you go, yeah, let's use your belly. I've reduced her right breast. We've replaced all that skin because it was really badly burnt and quite solid, and you can't see that in the picture. And that's her old belly button, just there. All right, and it looks all sort of fresh and painful and sore. And over time, I made her a nipple. And that's the real secondary benefit. And she said, yes, that's fantastic. Now she needs a solarium to get a bit of colour on her tummy skin, because strangely, the tummy skin, when you move it, goes a bit pale. I don't know why, but it just does. So you take a woman like this, she's even had old surgery down here, but it doesn't take away from the bit that I'm going to harvest. And we patch the breast to make it the same amount of nipple and fill up that breast with her own fat. And as she gets older and puts on weight, they'll both grow. This might grow a little faster because it's all fat, and this is half fat, half breast. So there may be a bit of a difference, but it's pretty close. And you can do it in thin people if the breast you're making is about the same as the tummy that's available. And she looks really tidy as she is, but this is 10 days after operation, so she's actually not bad. She doesn't need any fills, she doesn't need a second operation to change it over, but we did come back and make her a nipple later on. This woman, previous surgery here, again, this bit was enough. And so on. You see what we achieve. And they can look amazing.
These all dips?
It doesn't matter. Again, the tissue transferred is the same. The modality you get to get there doesn't change the aesthetics of the top. I can't tell you which are dips or trans because I've done both. And I would have to look back through the history, but it doesn't matter. So if you went to someone and they said, I'm going to do a trans because that's what I'm good at and I do them really well, that's great. Get them to talk to you about the risks and the complications. And you go, yes, I'm happy with that. It's not a bad operation, it's a good operation. They both work, they both have pros and cons. We often come back, so people say to me, is this all a one operation, am I going to be then fine? Well, no, you won't have a nipple, usually. I'm going to put in a little bit more than I think you need, so that we may need to reduce a little bit, and that gives me some chance to sculpture. And the little things like there's a little bulge here she's got, because she had a pedicle tram. She needs a nipple, we're revising this scar, we're going to lower this nipple, and bits and pieces in it, and it's that touch-up that really makes the quality. But the second operation, the little ones, the trims, don't hurt anywhere near. There's no comparison between the work the patient goes through to get through this as compared to going through the first operation. But you can get... So we made this one a little smaller to make it match that one, for example. And you can get a result and you look just spectacular. Hard to know which is the new breast. We use the tummy, the bum, occasionally, and it's really, you need a pear-shaped girl like this to make it work. But you can again steal some tissue from the bottom. One of my patients is bottom skin and bottom fat from here, and then we came back and did some liposuction on the other side to make her a bit more even. And you can take it from underneath the bum. I like to leave the bum alone in girls unless it's the best option for them, because I think it's one of the nice curves that a girl has after having had a mastectomy. I think that's, unless it's a bum that would be improved by the surgery, I tend to avoid it. Likewise, the inner thigh is an option, and this woman has no skin on her tum. She potentially could have had a bum done, but they've taken the fat out of here. This isn't one of mine, but they've done it on both sides. Is that an improvement in her legs? I'm not sure. There are some people that offer those. So nipples can be made by either making a bump on the side of the breast by twisting bits of skin together, like that. So you take two bits of skin and you wrap them together like a yin and a yang, and it makes the bump, and you come back and then tattoo. So this girl has had a bump made, and then she has a tattoo done. And it can make quite a nice result. I've got a very good tattooist at the moment who does the speckled in colour, so it actually fades pretty well into a nipple shape, nipple colour I mean, but the colour will fade with time and you often need to have it redone. And this is done with a graft, so we've taken half of this nipple to make that nipple. And this, the skin of the areola is spread around, and that's actually nipple skin in the middle. And it can give a very natural result, but you've got to have a big enough nipple on the other side to do that with. I'm going to buzz through just so we have time, but commonly we will do something to the other side. I would think in probably 80% of my lays I would do something to the other side, a lift, a tuck, an enlargement, or something. It depends on your balance, because the final aim of this is if you can get you symmetric, then you can live and you can forget about your breasts. If you're asymmetric, even though it may look pretty, it doesn't work every day. And so this woman has had radiotherapy on this side, and this side was really much smaller. This one continued to grow as she got older. We did a reduction on this, and it's lifted up at the moment, and it will sink down with time. And that restores a degree of symmetry, so she can get a little older. Now, there's a few other interesting bits and pieces. I mentioned before about the alloderm, or this acetylodermal matrix. This is the patch you put down at the bottom of the breast to thicken it up or to hold that muscle down when you're trying to put an implant in straight on. That's what the packet looks like. You'll potentially hear more about that as time goes by, but that's becoming more accepted in this part of the world. They're certainly doing a lot of it in North America. It's got benefits and problems. Fat, there's a lot of talk about fat at the moment. We inject fat around the edges of breast reconstructions to fill them up. So you do some liposuction, for example, on the belly, and it'll fill up little holes and make things smoother and plump them out. You can do that where there's been a mastectomy. You shouldn't inject fat into a breast. So putting liposuction in to make a breast bigger is not a great idea, because some of these cells are stem cells, and some of them have growth hormone in them. And if you are putting a growth hormone into a zone that has previously developed a cancer, and in other words, there was no control of growth, we're not entirely sure whether that's really a good idea. But there's been work by Wayne Morrison looking at growing breasts at St. Vincent's and encouraging fat to develop and try and grow. And the science is continuing. This will be an ongoing investigative area for the next 20 years, I imagine. One interesting one, just for the sake of showing you, in the early, they talk about the Brava system. This is a suction device, and it's not really relevant for breast cancer, but it's probably going to become part of the game, where you put these big suction cups on, and you have a little pump, and it sucks. And what that does progressively is puts a negative pressure in there. It will encourage fat growth, strangely, but it will. And you can take someone and give them a breast augmentation by doing this, and it's all their own natural fat. So if you do it over time, the breast gets bigger. So you will have a visible enlargement with the suction, but only this much actual true breast growth. So the breast will actually grow. The observation being that if you put something in a vacuum, it will grow. The idea then being that if you said, okay, I want to grow a new breast from nothing, if I put some stem cells in there and put a negative pressure over it, maybe I'll get enough fat growing to make it into a new breast. And the research is happening here, but it isn't available, it isn't necessarily proven, it isn't necessarily safe. But again, this is where the science is sort of continuing to run. So these are some examples of people having augmentations with the Brava. And I think it's interesting. I mentioned Wayne Morrison before, I'm just going to move on. So it's not for everybody. You can't make a sort of purse from a sow's ear as a reasonable state. You have to have enough in one place to be able to steal it to put it somewhere else. If you don't have the donor sites, you can't make it from the tummy. If you don't have a shape that lends itself to being an implant reconstruction, you're not going to get good symmetry. And so it is really a matter of balancing what's in the pantry with what you can produce. And then it's a matter of education, so that you choose something that's right for you and you find someone who can do what you need them to do to make it work for you. And the timing is a very individual game too. It's got to suit up here as well as down here. And that's...
Yes. Can I ask, I had a breast removed in 21 months, taken out 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Mild lymphedema.
Yeah.
Does any reconstruction have an impact on lymphedema?
No. The theory with lymphedema is that you have a limitation of the lymphatic channels coming from your arm into your armpit, into your chest. No reconstruction will interfere with them, and therefore even a lap dorsi shouldn't make your lymphedema better or worse. There is some theory that if you put fresh vascularized tissue into the armpit that you might actually improve lymphedema by allowing new channels to grow, especially if you've had radiotherapy. The observation has been that doing breast reconstruction really doesn't make much of a difference to that process.
Have you operated on the lymphedema?
Yeah.
If you take off some of the nipple from the original nipple to make the other one, is it still feeling in the original nipple?
Yeah, because the fin to the nipple comes up from below and comes up into the mountain, if I can call it that. What you're doing is taking off the top, and so the quality of feeling at the bottom is as good as it would have been anyway, and nipples heal remarkably well. So you won't see that scar, and the areola skin that you take around the outside doesn't have, again, a real issue with that anesthesia, because you're just taking skin, so it's really surface level. So actually they do very well. More interesting, I suppose, is the issue that you're taking breast tissue on one side and putting it on the other. If that nipple then developed a tumour in the long term, was it from this one or was it from that one? And so there's a little question. They used to breast share. They used to take someone with big and had a mastectomy, they would take half this breast and put it over here, and that was far more complex. But the nipple sharing is actually reasonably common, and they regard it as safe. So.
I have a two-part question.
Sure.
Do you have any stats on how often prosthetics actually get infected? And also when the surrounding tissue gets infected, and how often does the body reject prosthetics?
Okay, so infection is actually related, to my mind, mostly to the size of the operation that happened the first time. So if someone's having an implant put in and they're normal and they've got normal skin and you put an implant in, the infection rate is tiny. It's like, I've never had a cosmetic implant go south with the infection in my career. I'm 12 years down. I've lost a bunch of reconstructive ones. It's a much bigger operation. There's a bigger hole. It takes longer. There's more bugs around. And then you get hit with chemotherapy and you get immunosuppressed. And I suppose we're talking 5%, something like that, of implant reconstructions will go through an infection situation. And if that's really mild, you'll save it. If it's not mild, you'll lose it. And it depends on the timing that it occurs. If it occurs and you need to go on and have chemotherapy, you've got to get it out because you've got to get that woman well enough to deal with the chemotherapy within that amount of time.
So
if you've had chemo, you're a couple of years down the track and you have a rose thorn, it gives you an infection, it spreads to your implant, you can take the time to treat it. But I've had one girl like that in my career. I've had a couple with chemo where they've had an infection of their IV port and it's knocked off their implant while they're there. They just get septic and it goes through them. But mostly if you get your implant in and it's safe, like it's 6 weeks down and you've had nothing to show, it's yours. The chance of losing it in the long term is remote. In terms of rejecting is not an immune response. It's not like you reject a graft from someone else. It's more that you have a mechanical issue, so you get a leak or an infection. And they're the two things that really make an implant need to come out. But you, silicon's an inert substance, you don't have an immune reaction to it.
Thank you.
If you had a patient that lost a tissue expanded through infection, would you say that there's no chance of having an implant ever again?
No, you can have an implant again. I put an implant back in the lady 10 days ago who had a horrible infection. She developed an infection in the breast implant under a lap dorsi and in fact infected her knee joint replacement, which was just horrible because now she wasn't going to be able to walk. And we took this out, we washed that out, we gave her antibiotics, and she's just had her implant back in, and she's off overseas last Saturday for 3 weeks. No, it's working fine. So you can do that. The challenge is the damage that's done at the time of the infection. If everything scars down and goes tight, then you may not have capacity to stretch it up again.
The cost?
So, public hospitals are free.
Waiting list,
and that's the downside. So we have a long waiting list at the Austin Hospital. If you are elective, if you need your cancer removed, we come with a day. And so that's a.
If you have private health insurance.
Private health insurance, and you want to come through a private environment, you then go to your surgeon and say what I'm after, and so okay, let's give an example. For me to do a DF in a private environment, it's about $6,000 out of pocket, and that covers all your visits and all your procedures. First one, the liposuction, the nipple, the touch-up, the adjustment to the other side and all that. I just do a package because I figure that's simple. I work in public and in private, and if you can't afford it, don't go there because it's too hard. You need to be insured, I think, to do it privately. I've had a couple of girls that have done this uninsured, and a DF in an uninsured environment is about $40,000, I think, by the time you get there. It's huge. because every day costs you, you know, $1,500 yeah. just to be there.
So you're looking at about $6,000 to get a new boob.
With a DIA. It's less to do an implant or a lap dorsi with me, and this is just me. So, but the way I quote is I say, this is what it costs for the whole process. Some people say, if you want me for this day, this will cost this, and every time you see me, you'll pay a little bit, and if you do something else that we do, then you'll pay for those. But that's the way I...
And in a public hospital, what's the about the way to
do? So as an elective, as in you've had your cancer's done, you need a reconstruction, you're probably talking about 18 months, something like that.
So you say $6,000 by waiting 18 months.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily get an experienced surgeon, do you?
You get whoever's rostered to you on the day.
What about private patients in the hospital?
You can try. You won't go any faster through the waiting list, but you can elect to have that particular surgeon. And I'm a little shy about that, not to say it's not a good thing or bad thing. I'm the oldest guy out of the Austin and sort of set the unit up. But the other guys are just as good. You know, they do a fantastic job. I invited a colleague into my rooms and he works out there too. I would happily trust him with my wife if we needed to go there, because he's just as good. The standard at the Austin, for example, like most public units, will be pretty good, but you will get registrars that will work on you, you will get residents that will look after you, and there's a level, and that's what you pay for. You know, in a private environment, you know who you're getting, you know your team's done it lots and lots of times before, they're going to see you every day, and they're going to be in an environment that should know. But it's not to say that public care doesn't actually give you a good quality care, it does. And, you know, it can be exactly the same team in a public environment or a private environment, but you don't have that predictability, you can't. So if you said to me, I want you to do my DIA, but I want you to do it in public, I'd say, fine. But my waiting list is the longest waiting list there is in the public, just because
any
it is.
Any difference between you and Michael?
Michael Wammer?
Or
Finlay? We're different people.
He's
about to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, in terms of success rates, we've never actually compared the statistics. I don't know. I do this. This is all I do. And Mark does a lot of things. He's got nice hands, you know. He does a good job. I just don't stand there.
But I currently have a tissue expander.
Yeah.
I had my mastectomy 15 months ago.
Yeah.
But I've put on about 20-25 kilos since.
Yeah. You've changed the game.
Yeah. And I either have to lose weight.
Good on you. Yeah. And that's the game.
So it's possible, even though I've got the tissue expander, can I still have a DIA?
Yeah. And we often do that.
And my waiting time then start again from now, or?
You need to talk to the guys at the hospital. You need to come out and see us.
Yeah. Well,
but no, you're on a waiting list.
Further complications because I've got to have another
operation. That's the personal side of things. So, but that discussion is worth having with your surgeon, because you may be more appropriate for a different reconstruction now at this stage of your life. With this platform, you might take the clothes and go, well, this is it. Well, we should do this, and then it changes.
There isn't an outer limit time that is there for reconstruction.
I've got people that have been 35 years and come to one of these talks and go, I've never had the gumption to ask, but I think I will. I've done breast reductions on 84-year-old. You know, the surgery is about you feeling complete, and you've got to be in the right place mentally, physically, and financially too, if you're going to consider things. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan Podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.